Jesus proposed another parable to the crowds, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be likened to a man who sowed good seed in his field. While everyone was asleep, his enemy came and sowed weeds all through the wheat and then went off. When the crop grew and bore fruit, the weeds appeared as well. The slaves of the householder came to him and said, 'Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where have the weeds come from?' He answered, 'An enemy has done this.' His slaves said to him, 'Do you want us to go and pull them up?' He replied, 'No. If you pull up the weeds, you might uproot the wheat along with them. Let them grow together until harvest. Then, at harvest time, I will say to the harvesters, first collect the weeds and tie them in bundles for burning, but gather the wheat into my barn.' He proposed another parable to them. 'The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Then a person took and sowed in a field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, yet when full grown, it is the largest of plants. It becomes a large bush, and the birds of the sky come and dwell in its branches.' He spoke to them another parable. 'The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed with 3 measures of wheat flour until the whole batch was leavened.' All these things Jesus spoke to the crowd in parables. He spoke to them only in parables to fulfill what had been said through the prophet, 'I will open my mouth in parables. I will announce what has lain hidden from the foundation of the world.' Then, dismissing the crowds, he went into the house. His disciples approached him and said, 'Explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field.' He said in reply, 'He who sows good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world. The good seed, the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one, and the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. Just as weeds are collected and burned up in fire, so will it be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all who cause others to sin and all evildoers. They will throw them into the fiery furnace, where there will be wailing and grinding of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of the Father. Whoever has ears ought to hear.'" The Gospel of the Lord.
Well, good morning, everyone. Today's gospel passage continues Jesus' use of agricultural imagery to illustrate the teaching about the seed of God's word and its ability to find good soil in order to thrive in the garden of God's kingdom. Jesus follows up his parable on the seed and the sower with today's parable about all of the weeds. And here, Jesus explains that the devil also sows his own seed. He sows his snares, and for some people, they prove to be very productive. We learn from this parable that the children of God live right alongside the children of the evil one. And so we learn that in this life, good and evil, they coexist. Both truth and lies will be found in this life, and so we must seek the truth so that we will not be deceived. Jesus clearly teaches that at the end of time, Christ, the victorious Son of God, will judge all and give each person what he or she deserves. You know, at the heart of Christianity lies the decision that each one of us makes, either to do good or to do evil. In an age of relativism, some claim that our actions cannot be objectively labeled as good or evil. Rather, they say that the goodness or the badness of an act is actually relative to the circumstances that are surrounding my decision. Everything in that sense is relative, right? Well, this philosophy has not only been repeatedly condemned by the Catholic Church, but it is simply not true. It is undeniable that some acts are, as we say, intrinsically evil. Some things are always going to be wrong. Certainly, a person's responsibility for such acts may be lessened due to various circumstances. But you know, the act itself, objectively speaking, is and always will be wrong. For instance, it is not difficult to agree that killing somebody for the sake of entertainment, for the sake of the pure pleasure and enjoyment of killing, is morally wrong. But you know, other human acts are not so easily evaluated, and we must rely then on the wisdom and the infallible teaching of the Church to really show us the way. One such area is human sexuality as it pertains to the practice of artificial contraception, for example. A few years ago, all of the pastors in the Diocese of Phoenix received a letter from Bishop Olmsted, which at that time marked the 40th anniversary of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae. Of course, now we celebrate the 49th anniversary. But his letter to pastors read in part, he said, "Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae remains one of the most prophetic documents of the 20th century. Its relevance continues to grow as we witness the increasing suffering and harm that has resulted from contraceptive practices. Wherever contraception has become commonplace, widespread abortion has followed soon after, together with divorce and promiscuity. In the face of these evils which are tearing apart the social fabric of our society, I ask each of us to preach on the blessings of children and the harm of contraception." You know, the Catholic Church's teachings on the moral evil of contraception did not begin, of course, with Humanae Vitae. Pope Pius IX in 1930 saw the dawn of relativism on the horizon, and Pius warned us about the practice of artificial birth control when he wrote, way back in 1930, that the conjugal act is of its very nature designed for the procreation of offspring. And therefore, those who, in performing it, deliberately deprive it of its natural power and efficacy, they act against nature and do something which is shameful and intrinsically immoral. You know, it is crucial for us to understand, first of all, that Humanae Vitae was not the first time that the Church taught definitively that artificial birth control was intrinsically bad. This teaching has been consistent throughout the history of the Church. In an article by Mary Eberstadt, a research fellow at the Hoover Institution, Eberstadt makes the observation that all Pope Paul VI did in 1968 with Humanae Vitae was to reiterate what just about everyone in the history of Christendom had ever said on the subject of artificial birth control. In fact, all of Christianity, she says, taught clearly against it and warned that it was objectively wrong. From the Catholic popes to Martin Luther to John Calvin, the list goes on. Nowadays, though, you know, everything seems relative. We can simply evaluate human actions based on loose criteria of how it makes us feel or how it might help to solve my problems relative to the situation. Secular media reports over past decades have suggested that most Catholics disagree with the Church on this moral teaching. However, I think it is probably more accurate to say that most Catholics have never really seriously studied the Church's consistent teaching on this topic. So, what's the big deal, right? I would venture to say that most Catholics who use contraception have very good intentions. They're educated, they're involved Catholics who are trying to do the responsible thing. Our present situation has much more to do with a lack of understanding, I think, and wrong information. It's not so much a matter of people who are evil and who want to go out there and offend God. In a gathering of priests of the Diocese of Phoenix a few years ago with our bishop, Bishop Olmsted, we had a guest speaker. He was a retired army chaplain priest who was in his early 80s. And his mission for decades has been to preach about the gospel of life and also to educate the faithful and the clergy about the immorality of contraception and, of course, also sterilization. Well, in this room of well over 100 priests, Father told us the story that a priest once challenged him publicly and asked him if he really believed that all of these people who are using artificial contraception are actually all going to hell. Father responded to this young priest's question by saying, "No, Father, I don't believe that they are going to go to hell for using contraception. But you might go to hell for not telling them what the Church teaches about this critical issue." You can imagine the silence in that room as all of us priests were looking at each other, you know? You know, the most important thing we can do as Catholics is really to educate ourselves about why contraception is sinful according to the Church, why it contributes to so much destruction within marriages and society, and why we owe it to our children to know more about the wisdom of the Church in this area of life. This week is, of course, Natural Family Planning Awareness Week here in the United States, according to the U.S. Bishops Conference, and natural family planning is one such means of responsible family planning that the Church upholds as not only effective, but also of great benefit to husbands and wives. Natural family planning gives couples great freedom. It enhances their communication between each other. It strengthens their mutual respect and their care for one another. Here, sex is seen as a gift to be shared with one's spouse, a means to grow closer. It encourages self-respect, and it upholds the dignity of sex. You know, there is no doubt that natural family planning entails a lot of self-discipline. But these challenges and sacrifices will always contribute to the good of marriage. The consequences, though, of contraception are always bad, it seems. You know, where NFP is helpful to marriage, contraception and its attendant effects can and will lead to a variety of unwanted and even unanticipated problems, both physically and in terms of relationships between men and women. One need only read of the possible side effects from taking some of these drugs and artificial devices. I mean, and to top it all off, women are usually the ones who must bear the burden of contraception and to endure the ramifications to their bodies, all in the name of freedom or pleasure or whatever. You know, and if contraception somehow fails, there's always abortion to fall back on. My favorite author, Dr. Peter Kreft, calls abortion basically backup birth control in most situations. Now, I know you probably might be thinking right now, what does this short whippersnapper priest with this gray hair know about all this? It's easy for me to say, right? I mean, Father doesn't have to change the diapers. Father doesn't have to pay the tuitions. Well, you know, I'm already opening up college funds for all of my nieces and nephews and their educations. I'm already planning ahead. I will be doing my part. I'm very involved in my family, and I'm happily so. I remember talking, you know, to one of my sisters about this issue and how she deals with it in her marriage and her family. It is a freeing thing. It is something that actually nurtures the relationship. So sometimes I wonder why we let the culture and popular attitudes about sex influence us more than the church that Christ founded. I mean, the church that we worship in, the church who educates our children in our Catholic schools, the church that we call upon in crisis. Why do we not trust her in this? You know, the same church that says that Jesus Christ is present, body, blood, soul, and divinity, and Holy Communion in the Eucharist, is the same church who warns us of the seriously sinful nature of artificial contraception. Actually, if you think about it, it would probably be easier to see the church's wisdom on this teaching of contraception simply by the verifiable evidence that you can actually see and you can test out than it is to prove that Jesus is present in the Eucharist. Yet, we believe. The same church who assembled and approved of the books of the New Testament and declared them to be the inspired word of God is the same very church who warns that contraception is bad for us. It's amazing that we have no problems with the doctrine of the Trinity, no difficulty confessing Jesus Christ as God and man, no problem agreeing with the church on 98% of doctrine and social teachings on the poor. But when it comes to this issue, the church is basically this ostrich with its head in the sand. You know? The Discovery Channel experts say that humanity has always practiced contraception. There's nothing new under the sun, nothing to see here, folks. I mean, what's the big deal? Well, they don't tell you that Catholics who use artificial contraception have a divorce rate that is really no different than the general population, basically around 60%. But couples, according to statistics, use natural family planning have a divorce rate of around 3%. That is a huge difference. You know, maybe the church has really kind of on to something here. Maybe I need to take a second look. If you're open to seeing all of the data, you will see that Pope Paul VI's predictions in 1968, about which Bishop Olmsted was talking, about the consequences of artificial contraception have all come true. Literally all of them have come true. Our nation is a case study in the effects of a contraceptive mentality. Pope Paul VI predicted increased promiscuity, high rates of abortion, increased governmental pressure to force families to reduce the numbers of their children, and of course, an explosion of sexually transmitted diseases. So at this day and age, the church asks all of us to take another look. You know, as married people struggle to keep food on the table, to keep their lives in order, this teaching would appear to be sort of too much to ask. If you want the easy way out, well, then Christianity actually makes no sense. I mean, if you would also have to agree that asking the Son of God to step down and become one of his own creation, to be born poor in a barn, to be betrayed by one of his closest friends, only to be tried, convicted, and killed by one of the most horrific ways possible in Roman crucifixion, that would be too high a price to pay for our salvation. You know, like contraception, which seems to be harmless and easy, why didn't God just sort of snap his fingers and forgive us? Why go to all the trouble of becoming one of us, living among us, and then having to suffer and die a brutal death? You know, if God did not take the easy way out, well, then why should we? The secret is that the easy way out is really not easy at all, is it? And the last 30 years especially are proof of that. The reality is that we have bought into lies and we sit today here in the midst of the fallout. We must find the strength in the crucified Lord to be courageous enough to listen to what his body, the church, has to say to us about life. You have to admit, most of what we know about the church's teaching on issues of sexuality are actually taken from the popular media. They're taken from Hollywood and lying academics. From looking at the TV ads, for example, on female contraception, you know, flowing dresses in the summer sun, happy-go-lucky people frolicking in the fields, riding wild horses and stuff, skipping along the sand of the seashore, riding the Ferris wheel at the carnival with no cares or worries, you would think that contraception is really a whole lot of fun and games. It's an easy way to freedom from one's sexuality and the burden of pregnancy. But you know, if all the side effects to all these kinds of drugs and devices were not enough to deter you, though, I mean, blood clots, increased risk of heart attacks, high blood pressure, I mean, the list goes on. My brothers and sisters, I think what we are is what J.R.R. Tolkien in The Lord of the Rings called creation after the formation of the rings. He said, "We have each been deceived." The good news is that we have a trusted voice that God established for all time to lead us into the truth. It is the voice of Peter. It is the voice of the rock who tends the vineyard of the Lord, permitting the weeds and the Lord's harvest to grow together. This past century has attempted to sort of choke out the seed of God's word, such that the weeds of the evil one have overtaken the Lord's harvest. But you know, we must be willing to hear the voice of the Lord through his bride, the church, once again. We must grow strong once again and to reclaim the vineyard from the weeds. Jesus says, "Whoever has ears ought to hear." May God abundantly bless our prayer and our work in this coming week.